The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. Welcome. So, there seems to be a few new people here today. I want to welcome you to IMC, if you're new to the class or if you're new to IMC. The center is quite active, and there's lots of different programs and classes and meditation opportunities here. So please feel like this is a home if you're so inclined. It's a rich and diverse community, and people really are actively involved. So please feel welcome here. This is a Tuesday morning class. It's a regular class that's led by a woman named Andrea Fellow. And Andrea is off in Burma. She was sitting a month-long retreat, and then she's teaching this. This past month, she's been teaching a retreat in Burma. And she asked me if I would take over these classes for her while she's gone. She will be back at the end of the month. However, she's going to be teaching up at Spirit Rock in the month of February. So, and I am myself going off on a two-month retreat. I'm going to be joining the monks up at Abhayagiri Buddhist Monastery. And I don't know who she's got coming, but I'm sure that whoever comes will do a great job. And you'll feel very happy with them. So for those of you who don't know me, my name's Robert Cusick, and I'm a longtime student of Gil Fronsdal, who is the founding teacher here at IMC. I worked with Gil for a number of years. I continue to work with Gil. I also was a student. Gil sent me down to Tassajara to practice with the people from the San Francisco Zen Center at their monastery down in the Carmel Mountains, Carmel Valley. And so I spent about a year with them practicing Zen. And I'm a longtime Vipassana or Theravadan practitioner. I, after my time with the Zen Center, I practiced a lot at Spirit Rock and in the Vipassana community, and then spent a number of years in Burma myself, where I ordained as a monk with the Venerable Pawak Sayadaw, who's one of the great meditation masters alive today. And then subsequent to that time, I returned to America, and I worked as the retreats program manager out at Spirit Rock. I actually ran the residential retreat program for them. And then I got sick and couldn't do anything for a couple of years, so I meditated during that time, and that brings us to now. So that's a little bit about my background. So these last couple of weeks, we've been talking about a number of different things. We've been talking about meditation and practice, obviously, but in a couple of different ways. And a few weeks ago, we talked about meditation in a more focused way. We talked about the difference between mind versus mind objects and how one recognizes the phenomena that arises and passes through the mind as opposed to the mind that knows these objects. And then, so we talked in a more specific way. And then last week we talked about basically how one begins to refine and perfect their practice and know how to apply different kinds of techniques or different kinds of practices to different situations in their own experience, in their own life. So we looked at four core practices that the Buddha gave us, and those practices are, the first one is the cultivation of virtue, or sila, it's called. This would be keeping the precepts, developing generosity, patience, virtue, honesty, so on and so forth. So sila, the second one, is the development of mindfulness, which is taught quite a lot here in America. Mindfulness practice is recognizing what's happening as it's happening in a continuous way. And when the mind leaves whatever it's observing or whatever is the object of its meditation, when you recognize that it's moved off, you are experiencing the first moment of mindfulness. So mindfulness is this mirror-like quality that simply knows what's happening as it's happening and doesn't make a judgment on it. So a truck goes by, sound occurs, the mind knows sound. It knows sound before it actually starts to conceptualize truck and movement and rain and all of the other things that come afterwards. It simply knows. So this is mindfulness. This is one way of understanding mindfulness. Another classic way is that mindfulness is the act of remembering. So if one is taking sound as the object of your meditation or taking breath as the object of the meditation, when the mind moves off the breath, you start to think or something occurs and you recognize that you've left the breath, that moment of recognition is remembering that you're not with the object any longer. So this is the cultivation of mindfulness and clear comprehension. And this is, and mindfulness, it has this quality of non-judgment. It doesn't judge whether you're a good meditator or a bad meditator or doing something right or doing something wrong. It simply knows you're not with the object anymore, and then you can move back to the object. Or it simply knows that the phenomena that you're experiencing or recognizing in the mind is changing. So it knows what's happening. So that's the development of mindfulness and clear comprehension. The third one that we talked about was developing concentration, or what's known as samadhi in the East. And training the mind to come to rest on a single object. So you would choose an object, if it was a mantra or if it was the practice of loving kindness, you use phrases that you repeat over and over again, or if it's the breath, you simply are noticing the breath. And you're trying to notice the breath to the exclusion of everything else, or you're trying to repeat the mantra to the exclusion of everything else, or the phrases of loving kindness to the exclusion of everything else. And of course the mind is going to wander. It's just, this is what minds do. But when that happens, you simply bring the mind back to the object, very much like in mindfulness practice, and you begin to see how these practices build on one another. There's nothing really exclusive. Just for the sake of discussion, it seems like they're separate things, but they're not separate at all. These things, you can't be concentrated without mindfulness, and you can't be mindful without developing concentration. So what happens is it's this act of having these things work together in balance. But with the development of concentration comes a settling of the mind. So a lot of people here in the West, myself included, or I should say, this is how I understood it in the beginning. When I thought about meditation, when I heard about meditation, for me, that meant that you sit down and you clear your mind of thoughts and you just are focused on one thing. And that was meditation. That's what I thought meditation was. And so in a way, that is a kind of a meditation, but it's not a very realistic approach when you're just coming to meditation, because it really doesn't happen like that. And to clear the mind of thoughts is not such an easy thing to do. The mind, you have to discipline the mind in order to get to this kind of a place. And so the disciplining of the mind is using the technique, using the system, using the mantra, using the breath, using the phrases, using whatever it is. And you use this over and over again. And as the mind drifts, you come back, and the mind drifts, and you come back. And eventually, slowly, the mind will settle down. And as the mind settles down, there's an experience of what happens is the mind is actually coming into a state of unification. And so there's this experience of calmness that becomes available to us. So, you know, many people report when they meditate, they begin to fall into these states sometimes without recognizing how they got there. But the way that they report it is that they begin to feel calm, they begin to feel tranquil, they begin to feel a kind of happiness. These are basically the signs or the symptoms that the mind is settling and the mind is beginning to concentrate. So when the mind is powerfully concentrated, then those experiences of tranquility and calmness and stillness and peace get deeper and deeper and deeper, and then one can begin to experience a number of different things, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. And then the fourth core practice is the actual practice of vipassana. And by vipassana in this context, what I mean is not necessarily the cultivation of mindfulness, but the recognition of the impermanence of all phenomena that arises and moves through your conscious awareness. So the recognition of the characteristic of what's called in Pali anicca, which is impermanent, dukkha, which is the unsatisfactory nature that we experience and is often called suffering, and anatta, which is the quality of non-self, recognizing that there's no self in the phenomena that we are experiencing. It just comes, it has its life, and it moves away. If there was a self, this couldn't happen because it would be permanent. So there's no, as we begin to examine at a deeper and deeper level, we begin to see that these three characteristics are present in all phenomena. So as we begin to understand that and we begin to see through phenomena, we begin to have access to deeper and deeper understanding, deeper and deeper insights. And so this is the actual practice of vipassana. So I'm doing a little bit of review here because I want to build on this today, but these four core practices are sort of the foundations and the backbone on which all of Buddhist practice is developed or taught. And these practices are practices that each one of us can take up individually at any point. And I might use one practice, you might use another practice, you might use another practice, and you might use another practice. Or I might use all of these practices at different times along my own path of practice. So what it is, or what I'm pointing to here is that These different meditations that I've just referred to are basically systems, they're tools, they're the foundation upon which we come to recognize the habits of our mind that keep us from letting go, from putting down our burdens of whatever, and experiencing the kind of freedom that is with us and is possible at any point that we're able to actually get there. So these are methods, they're tools, they're meant to be skillful means. The breath is not the object of meditation practice. The repetition of the phrases of loving kindness are not it's not the purpose of practice any more than using a mantra would be the purpose of the practice. This is just a way that we get to the place where the mind, we can come to know the mind, we can come to see the habits of the mind, and we can quiet ourselves down, settle ourselves down enough to recognize what's going on, and then to be able to make adjustments, and ultimately to be able to just let go. So one of the things I mentioned in last week's talk, I think it was last week's talk, was that in relation to what I just said, that the purpose of the practice is basically to experience what's known as the sure heart's release, to experience freedom, to experience this putting down, this letting go. This is the point of practice, because this is where freedom and happiness lie. It doesn't lie in following the breath. This is the pathway to getting there. So we can go through all sorts of different experiences in our daily practice that can bring us face to face with when it's appropriate to apply one practice over another. We can also have any of you done any residential retreats? I know Bud has, but you have done longer term retreats. So when you go on an overnight retreat, whether it's a few days or a few weeks or a few months, you definitely will bump into all of this kind of stuff. And what's very interesting is that applying this in our meditation, looking at it carefully in our meditation, we can learn how to apply it in our day-to-day life so that it's relevant and can be integrated into our lives, so that there are times in our lives when one thing is appropriate and not another, and the next day or the next hour that might change. And so this is it's really important to begin to recognize different mind states, because they don't just come up in meditation, they come up in life. The meditation is a time when we retreat from the normal activity of our life so that we can actually see these things with greater clarity, with clear comprehension, so to speak. And if we're able to do that, then it's really easier to apply it in our day-to-day life, to actually have an integration of this in our day-to-day life. So what I want to do is I want to have a bit of a conversation in a few minutes, and we can talk about this in a general way. But before I do that, I'd like to teach you, because when I was a monk in Burma, I learned a certain kind of meditation technique that is, it's a very useful technique, and it's not frequently taught here in the West. So I want to give you a little bit of a taste for it, and you may want to try it if it's of any interest to you, and if it's not, put it aside. It's just one technique. So this is the development of what's known as anapanasati, or mindfulness of breathing. And mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, is taught in different ways when you're doing different of these, when you're practicing these different core practices. The way that I'm going to describe it now is if we were doing the third practice, if we were trying to cultivate samadhi or deep concentration. So when you sit down to meditate, I should ask you, are you interested in this? Okay, all right. I don't want to be presumptuous here. So so when you sit down, people do different things to get into their meditation. And you should always, and I should get rid of the word should, but it's a good idea to find some way that works for you to settle down and arrive on your cushion. For some people, that simply means taking a few deep breaths. For other people, it means doing a body scan, a relaxation. So you might start at the top of your head and simply go down the body, go scan the body and relax the body. For other people, it might mean starting at the feet and moving up. Some people are mind people. I don't exist below here most of the time. It's a big problem. So for me, I'll sometimes start with my feet, and I'll feel my legs on the cushion, or I'll feel my ankles on the cushion, and then I'll feel the tactile sensations, and I'll basically go through the experience of contact. And what I'm trying to do is I'm attempting to simply bring myself to this location, to actually be present at this location. I used to just sit down and then try to pick up the breath and that. And sometimes you can do that, but most of the time for me it was the breath would become a forced breath. It had become a little bit strained, a little bit hard to stay with it. And it's just that I went too quickly. You know, it's just like I jumped in too quickly and I didn't really settle down. So it's really a good practice. I'm just giving you some ideas about what works for me. You all have to find your own way. Just be comfortable, be upright, and bring yourself into the experience of presence, so to speak. And what I try to do is, in this process, I don't even look for the breath. I just wait for the breath to appear. And at a certain point, I'll be, noticing the weight of my body on the cushion. I'll be noticing, these different sensations, and then suddenly, I'll just notice that I'm breathing. So the breath will just appear. I haven't really looked for the breath because I'm trying to have the breath be unstrained. I'm really trying to be with the natural breath. Now, it doesn't make any difference whether the breath is forced or easy, or feeling natural, or feeling so soft and subtle that you can hardly even notice that you're breathing. It doesn't make a bit of difference. It's just when it's a natural breath, it's a little bit easier and I'm not so uptight. So I really want to say, because a lot of people get concerned that, oh, the breath is so hard to follow, and the minute I notice the breath, it gets forced, and I'm not breathing naturally. So it doesn't really make any difference how you breathe, as long as you notice that you're breathing. So I notice that I'm breathing, and then what you want to do for the cultivation of concentration is you want to notice the breath at a certain area, and this area is right here. It's at the upper lip or the base of the nostrils or the tip of the nose. This is where you want to bring your attention. And we've been taught when we're doing mindfulness practice that we can watch the rising and falling of the belly, or we can notice it in the chest or the throat or so on and so forth. And that's completely fine when you're doing that kind of practice. But if you're trying to cultivate deeper concentration, what you want to do is you want to let your attention, your awareness of the breath, come to this point right here. And what we want to do is we want to rest the mind here, but all we want to do is notice the breath. So it becomes a little bit subtle. So I'm going to say that this point that I'm pointing to right here is this spot, sort of this touch spot for the breath. And this finger is the breath. And so we're like a gatekeeper. We're waiting right here. And we're not concerned about what's out here, and we're not concerned about what's out here. So the breath comes to us, and at the point that the breath touches the touch point, that's where we know breath. Is that clear? We just know it at this one point. So we know it here, and we're not going to follow the breath into the nostril, and we're not going to follow the breath out. We're not going to notice the sensations, the changing sensations. We're not going to notice that it's soft or hard or cold or warm or anything. All we're knowing is breath right there. Then when the breath ends, we don't follow the breath. We just simply let the breath go, and when it comes back, we notice. So we wait right there. And that's it. That's the practice. So it sounds very easy, but it's let's say it sounds very simple, but it's not very easy. So basically, once again, I just want to review this with you, that when we are watching for the breath, we're simply watching at one spot. And we're not concerned about any of the sensations associated with the breath. It's like we know the breath as a concept. We simply know breathing. And when the breath is off of that spot, even if it's a long pause in between breaths, we don't move from the spot, we just wait. Then when the mind moves off of the breath and we start thinking about lunchtime or whatever we're thinking about, we notice that we're off the breath and we come back to the breath. So we remember. So this is the application of mindfulness. And your mind will fall off of it 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times. And basically, it's the same instruction as if we were doing the mindfulness practice. You simply come back. And you just stay there for as long as you can stay there. And this is a process that builds over time. You know, our minds have not been disciplined in this way. They have not been disciplined to concentrate in this way. And so they rebel. But this type of concentration is not the concentration that's needed to read this page and understand what's on here. This kind of concentration requires you to make a strong effort to stay with it. This kind of concentration is one of sort of relaxing into it, receiving it. So if I were to use a masculine-feminine kind of description here, this is more of a feminine receptive quality rather than the masculine doing that's required. So you have to bring balance, you have to show up, you have to know what the actual system or technique is. But then it's just a matter of relaxing. When the mind wanders, you just bring it back. That's just the masculine quality. And then you just wait, and you just are open and receptive. Because you don't make yourself concentrate. You can't make yourself concentrate. As much as we like to think that we can't make ourselves concentrate. Concentration will naturally arise when the conditions are present. And so the way that you create these conditions are through the cultivation of patience, through the cultivation of skillful means, knowing what the technique is. And then there's a point at which you just kind of have to give up all of your ideas about the way things are and just trust that the simple instruction that I just gave you will work. And this is not my instruction, this is what's given to me, by the way. So I'm not presenting anything here that I discovered. Okay, so I'm going to ask if we can use the microphone since we're recording here.
Okay, I hope I can actually ask this in a in a way you can understand, but with the breath and the point of contact, when the breath reaches that point, I'm really visual, and I notice that when I'm just doing concentration on my breath, I follow it, and it's a visual trail. So am I going to be focusing on this one exact point that lasts for a second, or will it be where I want to sit my mind for 30 seconds or constant?
Right. That's a really excellent question. So there's two ways that I want to respond to that. When you're doing this particular practice, you do not want to have the visual trail. You do not want to follow it visually. So what you want to do, you asked it really very beautifully, what you want to do is you want to rest the mind on that point for the duration of the breath. So this finger is the breath, and the only time, this is the only place you know the breath at the point. You don't know it here and you don't know it there. You only know it here, you see? And so when the breath crosses that point, you're staying with the point. You're not following the breath in, you're not following the breath out. That's why the example of a gatekeeper is a good example, because the gatekeeper simply takes the money when the car goes through the gate. It's not concerned about the cars that are lined up out there or the cars that have already gone through. There's only one task, it's to receive the money when the car goes through. So it's very much the same way. And so it might be 3 seconds, and it might be 30 seconds, and it might be however long. And then there might, you know, when the mind begins to calm down, when you begin to calm down, the breath will get softer and softer and more subtle. And sometimes there's a big gap in between the inhalation and the exhalation. It doesn't make any difference. The instruction is simply to wait at this point until the breath appears again. That's it. And sometimes people report that, you know, they get scared because they think they've stopped breathing or they're about to stop breathing or something. Don't worry, you're not going to stop breathing. You just You just cultivate the patience to wait there. Now, I'm going to explain one more thing, and then I'm not going to say any more because there's such a thing as too much information. But the reason that you're not following the visual trail as you explain it, the reason you're not following it like that, or the reason that you were not noticing the breath at the belly, the rising and falling of the belly, or in the chest, is that what's happening, instead of being at one, resting the mind at one point, we're moving, the mind is moving from point to point to point to point to point. The mind is experiencing the beginning, the middle, and the end of this, the sensations of the breath, you see? So that's a mindfulness practice, knowing that. But a concentration practice, you don't want the mind to move. You want the mind should be stable on one point. And that's really how this practice is cultivated. So this is one way of cultivating this kind of concentration. And this concentration is better described using the Sanskrit or Pali word samadhi, because it's not like we're concentrating like this. It's not like we're... It is that, but it's more this state of being... when this gets deep, the meditator can actually absorb into the object, can almost become one with the object. So the mind is very, very settled. And this can feel, it can be a very happy experience, a very profound experience. So maybe I gave you too much information, I'm sorry. If I did, I apologize on that. So if any of you have any questions about what I just said or what I said earlier, or any practice questions of your own, I'd like to invite those questions. And when I come back next year, I'll teach you the next step of this. Here's another microphone.
Can you?
And you can pass them around.
Can you go over the fourth point again of the four tools that you mentioned?
The vipassana?
Yes.
The actual vipassana. Well, vipassana it's described classically as that practice where the meditator is, whatever the object of the meditation is, the meditator is noticing the impermanence, the suffering, and the non-self qualities in whatever it happens to be. So for instance, if one were to cultivate samadhi to a very refined state, it's called jhana. And this is a kind of mental absorption that would happen. And when that happens, the experience of jhana are called jhana dhammas. Now, these experiences are completely sublime and beautiful, but they're just experiences. They arise and they pass away, you see? And so it's really easy for meditators to think, wow, I've really done it now. I've made it. I'm awake. I'm free. This is it. This is the goal. And you can spend a lifetime trying to cultivate this. And believe me, it's a lifetime well spent if you're able to do it. Even if you get stuck there, it's not a bad place to be stuck. But in fact, these jhana dhammas are subject to impermanence, suffering, and non-self. And so the teacher would then guide you to look at these things with this kind of a mind. And when you can see that these things are just phenomena, that these are just states that come and go, then there's nothing to hold on to anymore. And then there's access to deep, profound, liberating insight that can actually uproot the kinds of habits of mind that we live with in a normal way. So you know, when we begin to meditate, and even for very experienced meditators, one of the first things that we run into are called the hindrances. And these are the things that disrupt our meditations, and these are the things that also are problematic for us in our day-to-day ordinary lives. And so things like, now of course I'm going to forget what these things are, but Bud, can you help me out with these?
Aversion, desire, ill will, restlessness,
remorse, doubt, these things. Thank you very much. Yeah. So these things will come up, and these are the things that when the mind won't stay with our object, these hindrances will appear. When you do this concentration meditation, one of the real immediate benefits is that when the mind concentrates, the hindrances go into abeyance, so they disappear temporarily. So for whatever period of time you're concentrated or you're practicing this, you're free from these disturbances. You know, there's basically nothing bothering you. And there are mind states that will arise that are actual antidotes to these states. And so I just lost my train of thought. Forgive me.
The antidotes.
Yeah, well, it was before that. Senior moment here. Anyway, does that answer your question? Okay. Any other questions? Please. And talk right into it, please, because we're recording.
When I was doing the meditation, I found I don't know if I was getting bored with staying with the breath, which is very, very possible, that I drifted into like a loving kindness meditation. In other words, I started to mix and match, and I don't know if I'm doing it because I'm bored with one, and so I kind of drift to the other. Although I just tried to make myself aware, oh, look where I've gone. But I wonder if an object or if an objective might be to discipline, to have discipline to stay with one,
yeah,
to get back to it as soon as possible or whatever.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's a good observation that you made. So knowing that you moved from one to another, knowing that boredom might have appeared, knowing that it might be skillful to only be with one rather than multiple ones, all of those things are very excellent observations. And the way that we come to know these things are that we sort of stumble through doing just what you did. So if you... In my own experience, I'll just speak for myself, if my mind moves from the breath to loving kindness to four element meditation to whatever I might take up in any one sit, you know, I might look a little bit closer and realize that I'm restless or that something else is going on. So, to answer one thing at a time there is that it's best for the cultivation of any practice to make the resolve when you sit down that during this particular sit you will do one practice rather than another. Another really good little meditation tip is that when you sit down, whether you're going to sit for 5 minutes or 45 minutes, whatever you decide to sit, whatever time you decide to sit, you should sit for that period of time and not get up. You should just, you know, it doesn't have to be any more than 5 minutes or, you know, a minute if that's all you decide. But for that time, don't get up. I mean, stay on the cushion even if you're restless, even if you're bored, even if you're... Because in this way, you begin to discipline. The mind doesn't want to be disciplined, you know? It doesn't want to just... It wants to do what it wants to do when it wants to do it. And that's how we go through life. And our world teaches us that this is what we should do. It's all about us, and it's about making ourselves comfortable and happy and finding pleasure. And it's not about discipline. And, you know, discipline seems like it's a drag when it's discipline, but when you begin to experience the kind of peaceful stillness and silence of deep concentration, the freedom that comes from that, then the effort that's required in order to experience that becomes a very small price. And you begin to see that it's through doing this that we are able to touch some place of freedom. So it's like when a monk or a nun goes forth into a monastery, why would they do it? You know, why would they shave their head and give up their clothes and their life and their, you know, everything that they had and know? Why would they do it? It seems like it would be an incredibly big price. But if their heart calls them to do such a thing, and the practice, and they enter the practice sincerely, what they have done is they've given up one way of life to find another way that leads to this sure heart's release, that leads to freedom. Otherwise, they couldn't do it. It's just too hard. Take it from me, I tried. So, yes.
I was noticing during our sitting that as I was breathing and I was getting more and more relaxed, and then at the end, when you, I don't know what you call the instrument.
The bell.
The bell. It felt like I was awakening from a sleep state. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I actually went to sleep, but I guess my question is, what's the difference between such deep relaxation where you feel like it's almost sleep and actual continually following the breath?
Okay, yeah, that's a legitimate question. When you're concentrated, you would feel deeply, deeply peaceful and relaxed, but completely bright and aware. You see? So if you're falling into a state where it's almost like you're falling asleep, but you're not quite asleep, this isn't necessarily concentration, but it is a state of relaxation, and there's nothing wrong. And referencing the question the other man asked, this is a way that one begins to recognize the qualitative differences in the experience of these mind states. Because one of the ways that you can know what's going on is through the experience in the body. So in this case, the experience of feeling drowsy and sleepy, and it might feel very relaxing, but it's not necessarily concentration. I went up to the monastery the other day to learn the job that I'm going to be assigned during the time that I'm there. And they've been meditating for a solid month up there, so their retreat is well underway. And I arrived at the monastery with all the energy of the storm and the traffic, and I had to pick up this Thai woman in San Francisco to bring her up to the monastery, and she'd just come from Thailand, and all of the excitement of all of that. So this is the energy that I arrived at the monastery in. And I walked into the meditation hall, and it was like I walked off a cliff into this stillness. It was so incredibly beautiful. And I sat down, and boom, I just fell right into it. I just fell right into it. And then I came home last night and I meditated, and it was and I was really deeply, but when it was over, I said, was I meditating or sleeping? So it's that quality, and you can experience it, and it's just appropriate because somebody just asked me that very question before this session started. And so that quality, if it was really sleepiness, would have been, it could be seen as sort of in that energetic arena or field of that hindrance of sloth and torpor or sleepiness. Sometimes it's felt as a mental dullness, and sometimes it's felt as a physical heaviness, you see. And there are, you know, very skillful ways to shake it off. But it's and sometimes it's not so obvious. Sometimes it just feels like, oh, you're just really getting concentrated. I had the same experience of it during this sit. So,
but you said there's in concentration, there's a brightness and a
there's a knowing. Awareness. You know that you're there. You know, I mean, there's an awareness of what's happening. There's not a dullness at all. So I'm willing, we have a few more minutes, and I'm willing to, if anybody has any questions about their own practice that they want to bring up.
So when people come in late, mm-hmm. I'm trying to practice loving kindness and coming into my heart and accepting them, you know, and just accepting another person coming in to practice.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I have difficulty and I get distracted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if you can help me with that.
I wish I could.
I mean, what do you, does it distract you at all when people
well,
come
it,
in?
Well, it can. Of course it can. But, you know, again, it's very much like what this man was talking about, where you simply notice that you're distracted, that this is a distraction. So in that way, you don't have to reject anything in the meditation. And that's something I might not have said during these past weeks. I really want to emphasize here that there's nothing that can't that isn't part of the meditation. So when the truck goes by outside, that's just part of the meditation. When someone comes in late, that's part of the meditation. You see, when you fall into a state of deep bliss, that's just part of the meditation. So part of what we're learning to do is be with our experience exactly as it is, when it is, without it needing to be different, and we see ourselves try to make it different. So would they please be quiet, or would they please hurry up and sit down? There's just really a distraction, you see. So, and it's completely normal, by the way. This is not, it's just, we notice this. I mean, we notice that, and then we notice our response to that, and then we notice our attitude towards our response. So there's many, many things that can be revealed And the purpose of the meditation is to allow us the space to actually begin to discover these things. Because in our normal day-to-day experience, we just don't, we're not that aware, we're not that sensitive. And so, you know, you're trying to meditate and I walk in and I'm making noise and suddenly the noise that I'm making, you're noticing. And then you get to notice how you feel about that or what it does to you. You're welcome.
Actually, I picked up a Joseph Goldstein little book the other day and just randomly opened it. And it was only about a page and a half. And he described being on retreat, I think it might have been Burma, and trying to settle and hearing kids playing outside. And getting furious about it, and saying, "I paid all this money, and I've come all this way, and you know, how dare they be disturbing me?" And he said, suddenly he had this realization of how selfish he was with his attitude, and that he was expecting the whole world to sort of be revolving around his needs and desires, and of course, you know, other people have lives and. We all have to work together. So that really touched me because I came to IMC a couple of Sundays ago, my first time, and it was something else. And at the end I thought, Sunday's not for me. It was just very busy, crowded. So when I read that, I thought, I saw my judgments in a new light. And the other thing was, I actually came with a friend and we talked about how we found it hard to settle. And after that, we kind of, as we were running late, we said, well, we mustn't end up coming in late ourselves, having made all these judgments. And, so that can be, you know, people have circumstances and it's easy to sit here and say, you know, how dare they, what a nuisance. We don't know what's going on in their lives.
It's very true. And you've given me a perfect lead-in because I want to say, as part of the theme that I've been trying to communicate here is that we begin to learn about our habits of mind by sort of bumbling through them. And then we begin to look at them in certain ways like, oh, I'm making this judgment about other people. See? And then we begin to see that, oh, this is just a judgment. And in a way, we're now getting freer and freer because we're able to sort of back away from the things that entangle us to the point where the noise and the activity is just noise and activity. You know, it might not be conducive to meditating and we may make a decision Sunday isn't for us, but at a certain point that original judgment turns into a discrimination. You're able to use your innate ability of the mind to discriminate for what's good or appropriate for you and absent the judgment. You see, because the judgments that we make, that we might make when someone comes in and disturbs our meditation, in a way that this is something that gets wrapped into aversion, which is a hindrance. And so when we begin to see these things with greater and greater clarity, then there is the possibility not to get caught by them any longer. And the possibility to live with skill because, you know, it might just not be, Sunday just might not be for you, you know, or at a certain point it's just noise and it won't bother you, you see. It's, you can apply these things in your you know, day-to-day experience. You know, we've all had situations to deal with that they're just going to happen. You know, they're just there and there's no escaping it. When I was sick, I was just sick. No matter how much I meditated or tried to meditate, that wasn't going to make me feel any better other than the fact that I might have been doing something good for my mind. But so I could really say, no, I'm not going to be sick. I can't be sick. I'm not going to, and really, or just accept the way things are and, you know, get through this. How can I be sick? I must be flawed. Why did I get sick? You know, or any, you see the, what I'm trying to get to. And so there's a kind of acceptance that comes from surrender, and that acceptance leads to freedom. But you don't deny what actually is. You don't deny the activity and the noise or the sickness or whatever happens to be the distraction. So it's a little bit after 11. And once again, I want to thank you all for joining me today. And I'll be with you one more Tuesday morning, and then I'm off. So if anyone has any other questions, I'm happy to hang around for a few minutes. Okay, thank you again. All right. Stay dry.